perforated eardrum and vertigo. That is what Winnipeg Jets forward Brian Little is dealing with.
Bit of a headache too, probably.
Oh, yikes.
Felt awful for the guy as he took a puck to the side of the head. And it sounds like Brian Little will be making a full recovery after that injury. But what does that mean for him long term? And it's another blow to the Winnipeg Jets, who have their injury struggles all year long. Welcome back to Pinder and Steinberg from the Scotiabank Saddledome on a Thursday game day. It's the Flames and the New Jersey Devils, game two of a four-game homestand here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. In just seconds, we'll hook up with our NHL insider, Chris Johnston, a little bit more on Brian Little, and we've got CJ on the line right now. Chris, just an update as to what you've heard on Brian Little and what that means long-term for him.
I think it's actually a little too soon to say. You know, he's dealing with a perforated eardrum and has some vertigo after taking that shot to the head the other night. And so I think his situation really depends on how long, you know, especially those vertigo symptoms, you know, stay with him. And you know, I think his return to play is a little unclear. This isn't, you know, a typical type of injury for a hockey player to sustain. It's not a, you know, high ankle sprain like the one Alex Steen had last night. There's a little bit more of a clear timeline for return, but you know, I wouldn't expect it's too soon. I'm sure that the Winnipeg's going to be pretty cautious with this one, and you know, pretty scary situation too, because Brian Little missed 8 or 9 games at the start of the season with a concussion, and so he's had a tough go of it here the first month or so.
Boy, this Jets team, this player, like you just mentioned how Brian Little's had his injury issues. The Jets have had their injury issues. This just seems like a cursed year in Winnipeg.
Yeah, they have no good luck so far. I mean, it's been tough. I mean, some of it was of their own making, of course, but I think there's been, you know, a number of things that have happened beyond their control to, you know, get in the way of the season. And, you know, it sounds like they're going to move Blake Wheeler to center now. To make up for that absence. And, you know, he's played there before. There's a chance that they can, I still think they have enough offensive talent that they can make up for this for a period of time. But it really has been a tough run. And you know, when you see a player get hit in the head with a slap shot, maybe the most surprising thing is it doesn't happen more. But
yeah,
you know, we wish Brian Little the best. And, you know, as I say, I don't think he'll be back anytime soon.
On the Wheeler front, he's done this before and done it successfully, moving to center, right?
He has. I mean, what it does, though, is it breaks up him and Mark Scheifele, and that has been a pretty consistent recipe for the Jets. They've moved around the third forward on that line a bit the last few years, but, you know, those two have predominantly played together, and they've had tons of success. They've been, you know, a big part of what the Jets have been able to do these last couple seasons in terms of becoming one of the better teams in the league. And so, you know, I think it's not the move that obviously they would prefer to make, but, you know, given the circumstances and the timelines at play here, I mean, you know, sometimes breaking up two of your best offensive players is the best way to spread things around the lineup and get by. So, you know, we'll see how it goes for them. And, you know, Wheeler said that he's happy to go to center. So, you know, who knows? This could be, sometimes this is the start of a new line or a combination that works. You know, it's obviously not only one thing that goes. And, you know, for the Jets, you know, it's not something we've seen a lot of the last couple seasons, but, you know, it'll be a different look for them now.
Staying with the walking wounded, Alex Steen, high ankle issue. They're going to reevaluate in 5 weeks. Meanwhile, Vladimir Tarasenko for the Blues out for what's probably 5 months or so, maybe the whole season, including playoffs. And the Blues, coincidentally or not, add Jacob Delarose yesterday in trade with the Wings.
Yeah, and that is a coincidence. You know, that deal was in the works for Robbie Fabry before the Steen injury. You know, I think they would have done it whether it happened or not. You know, it was officially announced after the game last night in Edmonton. But, you know, a bit of a tough blow for them. I suppose if there's one, you know, good thing is, you know, part of what Jacob Delarose brings is certainly not much in terms of offensive production, but, you know, he is a pretty trusty defensive player, you know, fourth line winger type. And, you know, at this stage in Alex Steen's career, he does a lot of that. I mean, that they're not counting on him to score in St. Louis. He's, you know, a penalty killer and someone that can be used in matchup situations. So, you know, they're certainly not outright replacing him, but they're getting, you know, at least another guy that can do the same thing. And you wonder what sort of opportunities it could open in the top six for the Blues. in the process. So, you know, St. Louis has been humming along pretty good. They won their sixth in a row last night. So, you know, I don't think that this is certainly too much for them to handle, but, you know, a bit of bad injury luck, you know, the last couple of days for, or weeks rather, for them as well.
And from the flip perspective, Steve Yzerman in year one as the GM in Detroit, as much as it felt like it was a long time before he got the job, we all thought he would, starting to get his fingerprints. The Adam Ernie deal, he brings over a guy he knew from Tampa. He adds Biega from Vancouver after they added some D. Perlini deal made earlier, and now the Fabbri one. What are you making of the early days of Steve Yzerman running the Wings?
Well, you can see what he's doing with these trades. I mean, there's some incremental gains built in there. You know, I see Fabry's, you know, his pickup is, you know, a pretty risk-free addition. I mean, this is a player that, you know, his 20-year-old NHL season had 20 goals. So, you know, he's had a lot of, he's shown that he can have offensive ability. You know, he's been through injuries the last number of years. And, you know, frankly, on a Blues team that's pretty deep, he just doesn't, there isn't a spot for him. He hasn't been able to get the minutes or opportunities he'd like. And I think if there's one good thing when your team is down and out the way the Red Wings are, is you can give an opportunity to players like that. You can acquire them and see what they have a little bit more than St. Louis can, because let's face it, this is a year for the Red Wings where they're, you know, far more concerned about the draft lottery likely than their finish in the standings. And you know, if we're looking for what Yzerman's doing, he's bringing in young, talented players and seeing if he can find some diamonds in the rough, or see if maybe, you know, given a little bit more opportunity, if there's something to show. And you know, to me, that's a smart thing to do. You know, I think Robbie Fabbri in the big picture has a lot more potential than what Jacob Delarose has. You know, the Perlini deal, they did give up, you know, a draft pick from a couple years ago, Alec Regula from London Knights. Well, I guess there could be some risk in that if he turns into a player. But, you know, Steve Yzerman was, you know, a pretty aggressive GM, I think, in a lot of ways in Tampa. Didn't follow the trends necessarily. And, you know, he inherited a decent team there with some pieces, but he also built up that organization. And, you know, I think over time, I expect the Red Wings to get there too.
Yeah, no, I think we all hear nothing but praises sung about his work and his ability to exploit market inefficiencies, build winners. Now we just get to watch him with this inherited club. They've lost 12 of 13 after falling to the Rangers last night. You get a sense that Mr. Yzerman wouldn't mind being the highest odds in the lottery ball sweepstakes this April?
I think that realization is there organizationally. You know, it's just a factor of where they are. And I think that you know, coming in from the outside, as Steve Yzerman has to the organization, it's probably a little bit easier to come to that conclusion and to ride that out. And you know, they have some decent young players. Certainly Dylan Larkin, Anthony Mantas had a pretty good start to the year. But they don't have enough coming yet to where you think that it's critical mass and it's only a matter of time before they're, you know, climbing their way up the standings. And so, you know, I do believe that they're comfortable, you know, just seeing what they can have. I mean, obviously, they're not just going to sit back and roll out a bunch of veterans. I mean, we've already seen them waive Jonathan Erickson, a longtime Red Wings player. He's brought in a couple of these young guys that you mentioned, and you know, I don't think they'll stop there. I do think they're going to continue to turn things over. But you know, this is sort of the start of a rebuild. I don't even think they're midway through at this point, and you know, Steve Yzerman knows that the best way to get there is you need some elite talent, and they're hoping to add that here in the next couple drafts.
Chris Johnston's with us, our NHL insider, who joins us every Tuesday and Thursday on the program. CJ, get us up to speed on what's happening in your neck of the woods with the Maple Leafs. Patan's on waivers, Marinson's on waivers. They're getting healthier. What's the roster situation looking like now? What's the cap situation looking like now for the Maple Leafs?
Well, it's going to be the first time here in the next couple of days where they've been completely healthy all season. Zach Hyman had off-season knee surgery, and he's been on the long-term injured reserve and is at this point ready to come off. And the Coles Notes version of where that leaves the Leafs is that they need to trim three players from sort of depth positions in the organization. That explains two-thirds of what happened today, because Martin Marincin and Nick Patan, both going on waivers. I would expect if they're not claimed, they will be sent to the AHL. So that's two out of the three spots you have to clear up. But, you know, it's still unclear whether, you know, Jason Spezza stays up with the team, or if someone like Nick Shore might go down instead. I mean, there's still one more roster decision after those two that have seemingly already been made that have to go through before Zach Hyman can be activated. But, you know, we expect that to happen Saturday for the game Saturday before it. And so there's still probably at least one domino to fall here in terms of getting him back in the lineup. And then once they do, you know, at this point, the Leafs look like they're going to be carrying 13 forwards and two defensemen. So, you know, they could get in a situation like Calgary did years ago, where if they have some minor injuries along the way, they're going to have to dress a roster here and there that isn't a full 18 skaters.
It's funny when we saw Nick Patan on waivers, and Patan's a guy who's pretty known in this part of the world, his time in the Western Hockey League and his time in Manitoba. Pinder sent me a message with the eyeballs emoji, and Nick Patan on waivers. I know that NHL-wise, he's never produced at a high level, but do you see, with his American League totals, do you see him getting some looks? Is he pretty safe to pass through waivers, or do you think there's a chance he might get claimed?
We did pass through at the end of training camp, and I wonder if that was partially just because it's that time of year where most teams are looking to cut bodies and just don't have room to add them. You know, I think that there's a case, certainly, you know, 5 or 6 or 8 teams in a league that have some depth issues at wing. I mean, I don't see any real risk in at least giving him a shot. You know, he got traded to Toronto here last year at the deadline from Winnipeg. He only played a handful of NHL games with the big club. You know, he just played, I think, a little 12 minutes and change in the last game. That was the most he's ever played since he's been a Leaf. So to say he really hasn't got much of an opportunity here would be an understatement. At the NHL, they did play him in the NHL last weekend. He had a 4-point game the one night and then an assist the next night. And so, you know, at minimum, to me, he's an in-betweener because he's clearly someone that is a dominant player in the NHL. He hasn't really had a good run as an NHL player and certainly not one that's, you know, been put in any kind of top six role. And you know, whether you're Detroit or in Ottawa, I mean, even Edmonton, you know, I don't see any risk in at least giving him a shot, because until you see it for sure, you'll never know. But, you know, he faces some challenges. He's a bit undersized. And, you know, he's obviously been around a number of years and hasn't quite cracked through. But, you know, playing in Winnipeg system and then coming here to Toronto, I think it's two organizations that are pretty deep in terms of the players that do what he does. And so, you know, I think that I would give him a shot if I was a team that had some open slots at wing, just because, again, he's only 23 years old and he doesn't make very much money. So I don't see what the harm is.
$775,000, and I don't know that there's been clubs deeper than Winnipeg and Toronto at the forward position in terms of that guy trying to carve out a role. And in terms of GMs willing to bet on undersized guys, I believe it was Stevie Eiserman that gave Jonathan Marchessault his first NHL contract back in Tampa. I would be of the mind that, just what you're saying, like, what is the downside? If it doesn't work, you put him back on waivers, but you might have something here. Elliott's 31 Thoughts a couple of weeks ago, the quote from an NHL executive was, this guy's too good for the AHL. So is he good enough to be a regular on another team? We'll see.
Well, and the thing is if we could fast forward a year and you told me, oh yeah, he's a good NHL player, that wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I mean, you're kind of just going off feel, but you know, he certainly has the track record of someone that could succeed at this level. Was a world junior star, put up huge numbers in junior, put up good numbers as an AHL player. You know, I think it's about time he gets a real shot to see what he can do.
With Chris Johnston, our NHL insider, I want to get a thought on the team that the Maple Leafs are getting set to play, and that's the Vegas Golden Knights. Your impressions on this team, here they are in year 3 of existence, and they're still right there winning more than they're losing, but your first opportunity to see Vegas in person this year, your impressions of the Golden Knights being around them today?
Well, they're one of those teams that feel like they really haven't hit their stride yet, and you know, that's not a shock because they're sitting at 9-5-2, I believe, in their record. So, you know, they've won a fair number of games and they're in a good spot. But they're not feeling great about their game. You know, they blew a couple leads last week in the third period and lost games in overtime. And, you know, so I think that they're still looking to click. But, you know, make no mistake, I think this is a pretty good hockey team. And you know, certainly one that could develop into one of the West best if they trend in the direction they're expecting to go. So, you know, I get the feeling that not everybody's totally happy around that group. And I don't see that as such a bad thing just because of the fact that they've still managed to win a lot of games and put points in the bank at this stage of the season. And, know, kind of interesting. They're starting Malcolm Subban tonight in his hometown, first time he's played here in Toronto, rather than Marc-Andre Fleury, and it's not a back-to-back situation or anything. So, you know, I think that they're endeavoring to give Fleury a little bit more rest maybe than they did in the past, thinking that'll be the best way to have success at playoff time. And certainly we've seen a lot of other teams take on a similar approach to their goaltending.
Yeah, and Gerard Gallant said something really interesting to the media there, and I would think that it may have been taken as a shot towards the Leafs, but I think both fan bases would be very aware of what they have and don't have. Gallant said you need two good netminders to win in this league, and based on the numbers the last few years, you could argue that neither Vegas nor Toronto have had a really capable backup, I guess, since McElhinney left Toronto. Subban's numbers not good last year, not good this year relative to Marc-Andre Fleury, and the Leafs were also another team that used their number one a ton, almost in Fleury territory with Frederik Andersen. I thought that for him to say that was curious, given his club doesn't exactly have an ironclad backup.
Right, and it definitely was not a shot at Toronto. It was entirely in the context of talking about why they're starting Subban tonight, and he was saying that he believes in him and that they like some of what they've seen from him of late and want to give him this chance. You know, it's becoming way more accepted. I mean, I don't even know if there's a debate at this point. I mean, the best teams are using their number one less. I mean, there's certain teams like the Leafs that don't really have the option right now because, you know, their backup so far, Michael Hutchinson, hasn't managed to give them a win in any of the games he started. So, you know, that is the way that everyone wants to go. And it seems that, you know, I think that they're going to give Malcolm Subban a little bit more rope this year to see if he can take some steps and maybe prove to be a little bit better than he has in the past. Because if it's not him, I think they're going to have to find another solution, just as all teams that don't have a reliable number two. I don't think you can go a whole season and only play, you know, the back-to-backs where you split up your goalies. I do think you have to pepper in the odd start for your number two, you know, just on a game like this one for Vegas where there's days off before and after. And, you know, Subban's getting that chance tonight, and I think they're hoping to maybe catch a little lightning in the bottle with him being here in Toronto and having family and friends and the whole bit in the stands.
I know they don't have a ton of cap space as it stands right now, and not even just related to the goaltending conversation, but George McPhee has proven that he is just fine being aggressive and going out and making moves. How much of a player does Vegas become for you as we get closer to the trade deadline, knowing that they are very apt to make big moves?
Yeah, you know, I don't get as good a feel this year. They've... You know, it's funny, they entered the league a couple seasons ago, they had more cap space than anybody, and they had, you know, certainly fewer bad contracts than any other team in the league just because of the nature of expansion, and now all of a sudden they're bogged down. And you know, I feel like a lot of teams are like that in the league. There's 14 or 15 teams that are very close to the cap ceiling as we're talking now, and you know, I'm sure there'll still be a pretty active trade period, but, you know, I do think that's going to be a significant barrier to making deals. You know, the cap didn't rise as much last summer as it was expected to, and I think that hurt some free agents, and I think it's going to impact the kind of player movement we see in season. And so, you know, I think the desire will be there for Vegas because, you know, they're obviously acting as a team that's trying to compete for the Stanley Cup. They're in what they view as a contention window, but, you know, they've traded away some of the big prospects they drafted in Eric Branstrom last year as part of the Mark Stone deal. Nick Suzuki was traded to Montreal as part of the Pacioretty deal. They've dealt some draft picks, and now they don't have a ton of cap space. So, you know, I think that this is probably largely their group. I mean, that they might do something a little smaller as we get close this year, but I don't think that they're going to be in a position to take a big swing like they were last year when they made that Mark Stone deal at the deadline.
We started the conversation with injuries, and we'll get close to the end with that as well. Philip Grubauer is going to seemingly miss the rest of the week for Colorado, a group already missing Rantanen and Landeskog. We'll get a better look at Pavel Francouz, who I think was a nice find for them, although we didn't see it much at the NHL level with Varlamov there. Where are you at on Colorado right now? Because they were just absolutely guns a-blazing, but now three of their most important parts, poof, gone.
Yeah, they're treading water, and you know, it's probably happy they had that 6-0, 7-0 start, whatever it was, because, you know, it's going to be a tough period for them to get through. But, you know, I still think big picture this organization is going to be all right. I believe that they're going to be, when we talk about teams that'll be active before the trade deadline, I think that we should all be circling the Avalanche as one that has both the cap space and a nice haul of either prospects or picks potentially to deal from, and you know, arguably the motivation to do so, because you know, a lot of their better players are still pretty young, and you know, have a bit of runway here on their ability to their ability to contend. And so you know, I don't see any of those trades coming soon in reaction to these injuries. And you know, there is some positive news. It sounds like Rantanen might not be too far off returning. Not clear where things stand with Landeskog at this point in time, but you know, I think that they certainly have better scoring depth than they had a year ago, which you know, should help them get through this period. And you're right, a lot of it will be resting on Pavel Francouz's shoulders. You know, who hasn't played a lot of NHL games, so there's a bit of an unknown there. But you know, Colorado's a team I do think will be aggressive, and you know, maybe if Taylor Hall's name, you know, hits the market, I could see there being a potential fit with him. But even beyond that, I just think that they're going to be one of the big game hunters, and they are one of the potential contending teams that does have the cap space to sort of entertain those kind of moves.
Jersey's here tonight. We can't let you off the hook with a final thought on Taylor Hall. We got to expand a bit here. What are you hearing? What are the likely outcomes? And it's one of a myriad of big decisions the organization's facing here as they look to become competitive again.
Right. And, you know, I think the likeliest outcome is he's playing for another team other than the Devils by February 24th or February 25th, the day after the trade deadline. And, you know, potentially a different team than that, you know, come next year. I think that, you know, Taylor Hall, unless something unexpected happens, and there's always room for that, there's still a lot of time here. And the dialogue is good between his camp and the Devils. In fact, they're meeting today in Calgary. You know, there's a chance, I guess, he gets some offer he can't refuse from New Jersey. But you know, I think more than likely he's inclined to test free agency, to take it right to July 1st. You know, maybe even if he gets traded somewhere that he likes, I think that, you know, there's some appeal there to being in the situation that, you know, John Tavares was 2 years ago, Matt Duchene to a lesser extent last year. But, you know, where you're probably going to have a few different teams bidding on you, and you could take time to maybe visit those cities or certainly talk with the teams and all that. You know, I expect he's going to go right to free agency, you know, again, barring some surprise. But, you know, at this point in time, it doesn't sound like they've really gotten into numbers in too meaningful of a way with the Devils. You know, I think that they're just being open with each other about where they stand and how they feel. And you know, this one just feels to me like you know, he's got a unique opportunity to go for free agency. And you know, I don't think New Jersey is going to be holding on to him for, you know, for any length of time this season.
Great chatting. We will do it again next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Thank you.